Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker, and she uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we're all grappling with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy, healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Hello, Brad.
Hey, where are we going to head off to today?
Today we are focusing on the grandmother part of my introduction, because it is my granddaughter Georgia's 9th birthday today. And so, as you can imagine, I've been reflecting quite a bit on the last 9 years of getting to be her grandma, and kind of the transformation of stepping into that role of elder, nana, grandma. It's kind of a slow transition. You know, I was fortunate enough to be able to be there at the birth of my granddaughter, and I thank my son-in-law for that because he welcomed us in. My husband and I were both there, actually, and it was kind of a family community event with the four of us, and it was quite spectacular because it's one thing to go through my own experience birthing my daughters, which was a peak experience, as we talked about last week.
Right.
But then to be there again, to be able to watch my daughter have that experience was wonderful. Just wonderful. But I will say that when Georgia was born, I was most focused on my daughter and making sure that she got through the process well and was cared for and was healthy. And so after Georgia was born, I held her for a bit, but mostly I checked on my daughter to make sure she was okay. And once I could tell that she was pretty stable, my husband and I went home. And I was happy for her and my son-in-law, happy for our family, just overwhelmed by the experience of watching a human being being born. But that real connection, you know, that knowing what my role or my place is in her life has taken a while to kind of
crystallize, right?
Yeah, good word.
Yeah.
Because again, that first couple of years of her life, again, that natural desire to care for another human being and hold the baby and, you know, be a nurturer, that all lives inside of me. I think, you know, that's kind of a natural part of that nurturing part of my soul. But again, wanting to help my daughter with her experience as a mom and make sure she had support and, you know, could get through it. So that relationship with my granddaughter, you know, has been like a slow process of growing and getting to know each other and trying to kind of figure out again where I fit. During the pandemic, everyone came home and lived with us, so we had that opportunity to be, you know, really with Georgia every day. And I think especially for my husband, you know, that kind of bond with her really started to grow, and that sense of we are family and seeing those traits coming out. And so it's been a process, and a beautiful process at that. But I'm curious about, you know, other grandparents' experiences if that grandchild arrived and you were immediately bonded and knew who they were and felt them, because it was not just a natural connection. And with my grandson, who's turning 4, I think I moved more quickly into that connection with him because I'd already opened that door and accepted myself as a grandmother, or that, you know, understanding a little more of my place. So it's been a little faster, but I still grapple with it. Like, who am I in this? Because I'm still working full time and, you know, I look in the mirror and I don't look like my grandmother.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't even look like my mother was, you know, 44 when she first became a grandmother. And I'm sorry, Mom. I get it now. That had to have been shocking. So it's like this growing into process that I feel like we're all still trying to figure out. So that is on my mind. I really want to explore what that role is, our role as elders in society, whether it's as a grandparent or an elder in general, what we're supposed to be offering, what is it that we owe the next generation? Because there's been some, you know, some kind of loss of that generational continuity. And I'm not a, you know, social historian, so I don't know the exact date, but I get the sense that there was a couple periods of time in the last 50 years where things really got turned around. One was with that social revolution of the 60s and kind of don't trust anyone over 30 and, you know, the real anti-authority and that all adults, you know, were the enemy. And so there was kind of this stepping away from that respecting of, you know, the wise elder, listening to Walter Cronkite and trusting. And so that started a division. And then once again, during the 1980s, kind of that me generation where the, you know, boomers kind of came into their own, those of the 60s who were the radicals kind of came into their corporate selves and kind of thinking about, you know, how to best fulfill their lives. And so we saw this rapid increase in elder care being kind of farmed out to institutions. And also those who were moving into their elder years wanted to get away from being in family circles or family communities and moved out to Del Webb's, you know, resort in Palm Springs and went and started creating these adult communities, which really kind of separated them from that day-to-day with the other generations. And so we've seen this kind of split. And then we lose that opportunity for a transgenerational passage of knowledge and information. And again, it's a tough one because if you've done your years of raising a family and contributing to the community and contributing to the economy, I understand that desire. It's like, okay, now I'm going to play pickleball and drive my golf cart for the rest of my life because I earned that. And I'll drop in on the kids when I want to because it's my time. I get that. I mean, I understand that desire. But at the same time, if we are communal people, right, that we thrive when we care for each other, there's got to be unintended consequences to these divisions. And maybe at one time, you know, the idea was, well, we're separating, you know, the elder people from their families. And so that's from those who've been institutionalized, really diminishing the quality of their end of lives. And because they've been kind of kicked out of the family systems. And then the other side are the elders who have kicked themselves out of the family systems and created this divide and aren't really as engaged in kind of that day-to-day care and the passing along of knowledge. And I think those unintended consequences are a lot of lonely, disconnected, disenfranchised people. And so I'm wondering if we can revisit what a modern-day version of elder looks like, where you still have that independence and the curiosity to travel. I mean, if we're, you know, living into our 80s and 90s and still, you know, driving, whether we should be or not, I don't know. But that's another topic.
It sure is.
That's another topic. But people are living longer, their quality of life, they want to enjoy it. I get that. But is there a way that we can bring this back together? Because my senses, my very, very strong sense, working with 20-somethings and being the parent of a 30 and early 40-somethings and seeing, you know, the challenge in their life and the places where they could really use support. We need elders. We need to find a way to support the generation coming up. And the reason I say revisit, because there was a period of time, again, up until the 1960s and into the 80s when things shifted, where there was much more of this group experience, this familial transfer of knowledge or support system. People would go to their grandparents' house, you know, after school, and grandma and grandpa were the ones you could tell things to that you would never tell your parents, and they would still love you. And I remember my dad telling stories about his grandmother lived between the school and his cousin's house. And so every day he would walk home from school with his friends, and his grandma would have, you know, dessert waiting for the kids. She'd always cut a giant piece for her grandson and then smaller ones for his friends. And
as you do.
As you should, right? But having that like day-to-day contact was really essential in the development of young people. There's a lot of research that also shows that when young people spend time with elders, with elderly people, they develop more empathy, they develop better communication skills, they tend to have less anxiety, they tend to be able to slow down and appreciate some of the simpler things in life. I mean, that comes from time with grandparents or elder people who are in that place of life where they get to slow down and enjoy what's happening. You know, kind of that role of the parent, the primary parent, they're going 100 miles an hour. I know my daughter and her husband are. I know all of my friends' kids are. They're going 100 miles an hour. I remember going 100 miles an hour when I was raising my children as well. And so there isn't a lot of room to take that breath or to really sit with the kids or to maybe hear all the stories or just be there in a way that grandparents or elders in the community can be. Because it's not necessarily always a grandparent that fulfills that role as the safe person outside of your mom and dad that you can go to. And I feel like post-pandemic now, we need to start looking where our gaps are, where our social gaps are, because we continue to see rising, rates of depression and anxiety in young people. I read a statistic this morning, which crushed me, that said the rate of teen suicides has risen exponentially since the pandemic. It's actually higher than middle-aged men who kind of owned the highest rate of suicide for decades and decades. But now teen suicides have risen so much. So there is a community gap that we need to go back in and revisit now that we've, kind of moved past isolation and into this next new reality, because things aren't the same as they were in 2019. They're not going to go back to the way they were. And so we need to get re-engaged. And one of the reasons that things are not going to go back to the way things were in 2019 is social media and the influence and impact social media is having in young people. And we're going to add that to the conversation today as well. But I want to preface that by saying it doesn't serve us to just bash social media or to talk about the ills of it, because it's here and it exists.
It's not going away.
And it's not going away. And so we can't just bash it. And it really doesn't serve us to bash parents for allowing their kids to be on social media or telling parents that they're somehow lacking in their responsibilities, because they're going 100 miles an hour. They can't cover all the bases. And a lot of them are also really connected to their social media as their way of tuning out or zoning out. And it's become a very convenient way of coping with moving at 100 miles per hour. So I want to kind of lay that out first. I'd like to try not to just bash the parents or say that social media is bad, but to really address what can we do if you stand in the elder's pocket like I do, like you do, and Donna's here today. Donna's also part of the elder pocket, I think. How do we help without judgment? And then the second part is, what is it that the younger generations are needing from us? I'd like to hear from you. What is it that would be helpful from those in the community around you? How do we engage? There, and I don't even know if it exists now, Brad, maybe it still does, but there used to be a nonprofit organization of elders, of senior citizens, who could list their skills, and then you could tap into it and, find a senior that could help with a nonprofit or with one community event. Was it RSVP? I can't remember what it's called. And if someone's involved with that, maybe you can call and remind me.
I remember that organization too, but I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head.
Because how great would it be to be able to list your services or have this place to go? Hey, I need a grandma for my 5-year-old, right? I need someone to sit and talk to my grandson. I want someone to share the stories that are important because I'm going 100 miles per hour and I know these things are important. I just don't have enough arms, legs, and time to do that.
Grandma's to you or grandma's to go.
Yeah. Yeah. But I want all elders, elders, Uber elders.
Elders are us.
Yes. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you are invited to be part of today's conversation. I hope that there are a lot of ideas out there. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram. I have a happy birthday photo of my granddaughter, Georgia, up there. So you can send her a note because I'll let her read them all. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org, and you can podcast our show wherever it is you get your podcast. Just search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist and hit subscribe, and it will be there for you to listen at your convenience. And if you get a chance, listen to last week's show about peak experiences, because we're going to tie that in a little bit to today's show as well. So we'll take a quick break and come back and open up our phone lanes and continue the conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
People try to put us to down.
Talking about my generation.
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
Hope I die before I get old. Dig what we all say. I'm not trying to cause a big sensation. Just talking about my generation.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Welcome in. Today we are talking about the role of elders in society. Where do we fit? What is our job? What do you think our role is? And for the younger generations, what is it that you actually need from your elders? Now, research looking at the role of elders in society, the senior citizens, the seniors, there's a couple really important pieces to coming into our elder age. One is that elders are the custodians of our family history. They are the custodians of spiritual values and family connections and the community glue. There is a specific role developmentally if you look at the stages that we go through throughout our life. That's a really important piece, that it doesn't end once our kids are launched and leave home, that we actually have another developmental role, and that is to transfer that knowledge and to hold a place for that knowledge to be accessed so that as young people kind of come up in the family and they start to get curious, they have a place to go to gather that information. Elders are also supposed to be part of the helping care within the family and community systems to bring that different kind of lens of help and a different way of interacting and a different way of disciplining and a different way of spending time. That care doesn't mean raising the grandchildren or raising the younger generation, but being there to provide that support and care as kind of a backup system. And then that main piece of that elder role is to mentor and transfer knowledge, to mentor and then pass along the jobs, pass along the opportunities to the next generation, and then cheer them on. So they seem like fairly basic roles for the elder generation. But statistically, the last two generations of our seniors have not really jumped in and taken on those roles as had been in the past. So where are you on this? Are you part of the helping elder generation, or are you someone who's in need of a helping elder? 805-781-3875 is our number. And Charlie, is that you?
That's me.
I haven't heard from you in a while. Can you turn down your radio?
I know it's been a while. Okay, I was go back to school.
You went back to school?
Yeah, I went to Cal Poly, and I taught at a community college for a while, dabbled in some botany, went back to Cal Poly to study botany seriously, and then found just really good hanging out with some of the kids, and I wound up doing a program on the college radio station.
Good for you. So how do you feel about your role as an elder in society?
Well, okay, I embraced it on a T-shirt I had made.
Okay.
Retirement. It's a full-time job.
And what
you
is...
run for public office.
Yeah.
Run for your local community service district. Put you in a leadership role in your community, and you can reach out, help all kinds of people.
Absolutely.
Anyway, go back to school and... Well, in fact, I think when I went back to Cal Poly in my 70s, there was an article about a lady at one of the colleges that got her degree like in her 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's wrong. Go back to school and learn, and then you have an opportunity to pass on your experience in the particular field and learn what the younger guys are doing.
Yes.
You get a good interchange.
I agree. And I think having multi-generations on campus is also really important, to not have it be such a novelty that there's an elderly person or an elder person in the college classes or walking around campus. It's a great opportunity to exchange stories.
One of the things, somebody called me, I think somebody had one of their assignments from the classes is interview an older person.
Mm-hmm.
And about various things. And then actually, there was an article written about my adventures on KCPR mm-hmm. As the oldest working college DJ.
Well, Charlie, I'm glad to know that you're still out there kicking and that you're still doing your part to enhance the community around you. And by the way, that assignment came from one of my classes.
I'm sure it did.
Thanks for tuning in, Charlie. Have a great day. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And that is a great suggestion. Get out there where the young people are and be visible. Because Charlie reminded me that prior to the pandemic, I did assign to all my classes to go and interview an elder somewhere in the community. And the first comment that most of the students would make is, but I never see anyone older. How will I find them? How would I find someone to talk to? And I said, well, if you go downtown, they're out in the wild most of the time in coffee shops or walking or go out to the beach. And that was part of the exercise that was so great, is that the students weren't even looking or seeing people that were elderly around them until they were tasked with finding someone. And then they would write about, oh my gosh, as soon as I started looking, there's a lot of older people everywhere. And most of them had really great experiences of starting a conversation and getting to know someone and bridging that generational gap. Since I couldn't do it through the pandemic and I haven't brought it back, but now talking to Charlie, I'm wondering if it's time again to bring that back so we can start dealing with or addressing that social gap that I keep talking about. There's a social gap. There's a big space missing in our communities, and we need to find a way to reconnect them.
Elizabeth, Mark from Los Osos, he didn't want to go on air.
Hi, Mark.
But he called and said that organization that you and I were reaching for, SCORE, the Service Corps of Retired Executives.
Yes.
Yeah.
Does it still exist?
I'm not sure. Now we're going to have to go and find out.
We'll put our intern, Isabel, on that, and maybe she can come up with something.
Okay, Isabel, we'll put Isabel on, seeing if the Service Corps of Retired Executives is still a thing, and see if we can get some contact information for them.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate that. Because part of the challenge of building that generational gap is finding ways to get multiple generations together. How do they find each other? And again, it's an interesting dichotomy in our society, because along with having this kind of separation, a lot of young families feeling really isolated, feeling really overwhelmed, not having access to quality childcare, which is a universal problem in this country, that there are many more people, young families, that need childcare than childcare is available. That's another program. There is also this segment of the population that actually, since the pandemic, and it started actually in 2008, there's another segment of our population that has returned to multi-generational living arrangements, that they're actually intentionally moving in with their grandparents or, you know, different parts of the family. So we're seeing more multi-family households than we had prior to 2008 and definitely prior to the pandemic. So although there's kind of this overarching need for more direct involvement by elders with the next generation, there are segments of the population that are kind of moving towards that collectivistic, pooling our resources way of raising a family. Another one of the reasons why this topic is so important to me today is because this weekend I was grading papers for one of my classes. And I think I've mentioned this, but I feel really committed to helping my students without shaming them about social media, but helping them to kind of engage into the world outside of social media. So I have created this project I called Something New, and each of my classes do it, and they do it every week. They need to go out and do something new. Go to a game on campus, join an intramural league, go see a lecture. It doesn't have to cost money, but go do something. There's line dancing classes in the middle of the UU. There's actually a lot of social events happening on campus every day, all day long. But the students have kind of lost that ability, that capacity to kind of get out of the rooms, get off their phones, and out into public. There's a lot of anxiety. Having been indoors during the pandemic, there still is this inability to just seamlessly be social again. Because young people are naturally pretty social, but they found that social world in their phone on the social media and kind of miss it outside. Okay, so I send them out to do these something news because my feeling is that if I get them doing new things, they won't rely on their social media so much to feel connected. So this weekend I'm grading papers. And I was taking a little break and I flipped on Hulu. And the first thing that pops up is a documentary series called Social Studies. It just was released this weekend. I feel like that they targeted exactly to my account for me to watch because it is a 5-part documentary series that was filmed in Los Angeles over the course of a year, the school year, like 21 into 22, right after the pandemic. And this filmmaker followed a group of Los Angeles teens, 25 of them, from different diverse parts of Los Angeles. This group of teens who opened up their phones and their social media accounts and their personal lives and allowed them to be kind of followed to get this super intimate glimpse into how their social media has reshaped their childhood. And actually, it's shaped their childhood because this is the first generation of digital natives who don't know a life prior to being completely immersed in the social media world. And to say that it was distressing is an understatement. It was so much. There was so much pain and so much disconnect and so much anxiety throughout the entire series that it made me want to try to find them all and hug them or find them all and bring them to school so I could get them involved in doing things off their phone. I highly, highly recommend it, especially because it'll really help you understand how dire our generational separation is right now, how much we do not know about what is happening in the lives of young people. And again, at no fault of their own, because they are a product of the narrative, the social story that they've been raised with. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to be part of the conversation. And is this Summer?
Yes.
How are you? Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
I'm good. I just wanted to share something.
Please do.
I'm up there, believe me, up there, and kind of going through my house with things that I don't need and use. So I had a bunch of yarn and crochet paraphernalia, and I have a younger friend whose daughter is around maybe 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
So I taught her how to crochet rather than, you know, look on a phone. She loves it. She takes it everywhere because, you know, keeps her hands busy, keeps her mind busy. And even in school, she took it to school and her teacher brought her a something to make. I think it was a stuffed animal or something to crochet. So I'm just thinking that crocheting or doing something with your hands, mm-hmm. teaching the kids, is going to keep their little fingers and their little brains on that instead of on their phone.
Absolutely. How was that experience for you, sharing your knowledge in your art?
You know what? I did not have the intention mm-hmm. of that being keeping her off a phone. I don't even know she has one yet. But after when I finished, I thought, wow, that's going to keep her busy and her mind busy, and she can still go to school. She can be in class and crochet and still learn and listen. And, you know, my grandmother taught me how to crochet. So you know, I'm like, definitely her grandmother. And so she loves it. Her hands are busy. Her brain is busy. I think it's a great thing. I'm going to teach her how to embroider next time I see her.
Can I send my granddaughter to you? Because yeah. I think part of the challenge also, Summer, is passing on those skills, because I don't have those skills to pass on to my granddaughter. And my mother-in-law is no longer with us, and she was a quilter and embroiderer. I don't have anyone to pass along those the fiber arts crafts.
How to crochet. You can learn how to crochet online. It's so easy.
All right.
Yeah.
Now I feel challenged. But, you know, there is a fiber arts club on Cal Poly campus. And a number of my students, one of my students actually started it, as there's something new. And they've gathered a group and they're doing crocheting and needlepointing and loving it.
Oh, yeah. I think it's way better for these younger people to be doing that than looking on their phones.
Yes. And I like what you said. It's something to keep their hands busy and their mind busy, because, you know, their little attention spans have also gotten changed over the last generation. And they have a shorter attention span than the generations before, which is an issue, because we should really be working on expanding their ability to focus. But aside from that, if they can sit in class and be listening to a lecture and crocheting, it helps them actually to focus on what they're hearing, because they don't feel so splintered. So, Summer, kudos to you. I love that you've shared your gift, and I hope some other young people find their way to you.
Yes, and I hope somebody gets this as a good idea.
I agree. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. And I open the show wishing my 9-year-old granddaughter a happy, happy birthday, and talking about that role of the elder, the role of the grandparent in the lives of the next generations. What are we supposed to be doing? I don't know if that's clear, because I think at times I feel compelled to be up there helping with childcare, but I realize that's not really my job. But at the same time, I want to support my daughter and her husband and the family. I want to be there. I want to pass knowledge along. Mostly, I just want to smell my grandkids and hug them and then send them home. But
that's the beauty of
that
being
is
a
the
grandparent.
So I'm asking you, what do you see as your role as a mentor or a guide or an elder in society? Do you owe something to the next generation, or have you done your part and that's it? We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue this conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I took my love, took it down. Climbed a mountain and I turned around, and I saw my reflection in snow-covered hills, till the landslide brought me down. Oh, mirror in the sky, what is love? Can the child within my heart rise above? Can I sail the changing ocean tides? Can I handle the seasons of my life?
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. What is your role as the elder? And if you're not an elder yet, what would you like? What would be helpful to you if there was an elder available? You know, so this idea of having the opportunity to connect with someone who kind of has this wisdom, like crocheting, as Summer was talking about, or someone who can teach us how to cook, or is someone who can show us how to fix things around the house. I mean, I see that as a huge generational gap, the ability of the younger generations to kind of fix things that break. And where's the handyman dads and grandpas who are passing on that information or passing that knowledge down? How do we value that knowledge as something that's important? And I think part of the challenge of bridging that generational kind of divide and bringing us back together as a community, because communities are not sectioned. There aren't communities of little people, you know, children and toddlers and babies, and there's not a community of teens, and there's not a community of, you know, adults, and then elders. At least it's not supposed to be that way. We're supposed to have this kind of diverse age group community where everyone kind of depends and leans on each other. And each member of that community has a really important role. As I mentioned earlier, young people benefit from learning to care for and be patient and listening to their elders and hearing their stories. They also benefit from having someone who's willing to listen to their stories, someone who's willing to teach them a skill, someone who's willing to be on their side. You know, the parenting job is tough because we're the disciplinarians and we're supposed to be guiding our children. And so it's nice to have that good cop, bad cop, where you might have the grandparent who can support the parents, but also be kind of that safe space to hear the conversations, to hear what the kids are needing to talk about. And that really becomes essential when we talk about depression and anxiety and suicidal ideation, which has grown so much in the last 5 years in the teen population. And research shows that one of the best, there's two really critical ways that we can help reduce the amount of suicides and suicidal ideation. The first one is just talking and listening, more listening than actually talking, but being willing to hear what someone who's suffering wants to say, letting them know that you're there without judgment, witnessing their story, hearing the tough conversations or the tough experiences that they're having without overreacting or trying to change them or trying to give them advice or fix them. That's their parents' job. But as the wise elder, we can listen and we can offer ideas in a more subtle way, in a more modeling way. But to be there and listen, the reduction in suicidal ideation and actually suicide attempts is great when someone has a person that they can reach out to and talk to. The second part of that taps into what we talked about last week around peak experiences. And Maslow found that when we have peak experiences, we experience something that gives us great awe, that we feel small in the universe, that gives us that sense of united connectedness to the universe. Seeing, you know, that first view of Yosemite Valley when you drive through the tunnel, or that experience of a sunset with the great rays coming down and feeling like the only person in the world, or having a peak experience, you know, on a hike or riding a bicycle or reading something that's profound and life-changing. Those peak experiences give our lives a sense of meaning, and they stick with us and remind us that life is actually worth living. And so to help young people to have those peak experiences, to take them places, to show them things, to help them experience things that actually make them feel like life is worth living, is a key and crucial part of that elder experiences. Because again, most parents are going 100 miles an hour. Most are trying to work two jobs just to keep a roof over their head, trying to keep up with their own lives, and have that extra piece of time to be able to step in with their kids and really experience these greater life events is tough. I get that. And so what a great opportunity then for someone with some time and some expertise to try to help young people have these peak experiences. Because right now, the time that's spent on the phones and on social media does not allow for peak experiences. Because I would argue there's no peak experience being had on a phone or on social media. And I promised that I wouldn't make this show about bashing social media, because it is there. So I don't want to do that. But it's a tool for passing information or for connecting with other people. But to be kind of that go-to way that we spend time all day long is really preventing people in general, but mostly young people, from having their own authentic internal experiences. because external validation only takes us so far. It is not lasting. It doesn't improve our quality of life. It's the internal experiences, those internal validation experiences, like peak experiences, going on a backpacking trip, mastering a skill you didn't think you could do, learning, you know, something thrilling and new. Those are those internal experiences that get kids excited to wake up in the morning, and that's what's missing. Our number is 805-781-3875. I'm curious to know, where are my elders out there? What is our role? What are you doing to help support the next generation? What are some things that you've found valuable? Or are you feeling concerned that you don't know how to step in and help and be supportive? And if you're of the younger generation and you're looking up at your elders, what is it that you need? What would be helpful? 805-781-3875.
I've got a question myself, actually, Elizabeth. As I'm thinking through this, it's the concept of resistance in some of our young people to even accepting any kind of help or advice from us. It's the what I call the okay boomer effect.
Yes.
And to me, I find that to be eminently difficult to try to get around. We know what's cooking. You guys already messed it up. So yeah. What do we do?
I think you're right on with that, that is one of the reasons we have this gap, because we as the elders don't really know how to step in, and our instinct is like, I know so much better, and follow me, and I can make it work for you, and you know, follow my lead. And then we get a lot of resistance and defense. So the key is, how do we know, how do we engage? How do we actually do something that young people will listen? Well, first we need to be current and engaged in what they're doing in their lives and curious about what they're doing in their lives. When you show that you're available and open and supportive and curious about who the young people are, they're going to then in turn be curious and more open and engaged with who you are. But we have to be willing to take those first steps and get to know what their life is like on a daily basis without that judgment, without saying, well, that phone is rotting your brain and that social media is. As soon as we get into that, we've created a defensive response and we've lost that young person. And so going back to the documentary series of social studies, if you want to start getting current, find someone with Hulu, or if you have Hulu, watch that documentary series. It's 5 parts and it runs through all of these experiences that our young people are having that through their social media that has shaped their actual worldview. This is how they see the world. And they show episodes about bullying and unrealistic beauty standards and coping with the comparison pressures of how other people look, which causes great anxiety and depression. They talk about exploring sexuality and where young people are learning about sex and sexuality through social media on these unrealistic sites and porn sites. They talk about the college admissions race and how the hype around what college you get into has gotten so overwrought for young people that it causes these feelings of depression and anxiety and suicidal ideation, all about getting into school, which should be a joyous experience. So please watch this and you'll get a sense of what their day-to-day looks like and how it's caught up in this kind of mishmash of algorithms that keep feeding information that continues to damage their self-esteem and well-being. 805-781-3875 is our number. And Steve, thanks for calling.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for calling in. I hear you're on the road.
Yeah. This is one of my travels. You know, I travel up to 101, and I listen to, for the past 30 days, I was letting other gentlemen know that I've just been listening to NPR more frequently over the last 30 days, and I have an 8-year-old granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I, we've been married 38 years.
Congratulations.
And thank you. But you know, you don't have to badger social media with me, because I'm the guy that's anti social media.
Okay.
And I like to get out and do things. And that's what I've tried to teach our granddaughter. And, you know, when she's on electronic devices or things like that, not too long ago, we went out and flew a kite you know, on a nice windy day.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife, she's a huge in crafting, you know, and the lady with the crochet and things. She hasn't done the crochet with our granddaughter's name is Sadie May. And she hasn't done crochet, but they do all kinds of crafts. They do gingerbread houses in Christmas time. They actually, most recently, took a fresh piece of canvas that's already on wood and, you know, with pencil designed what they wanted to do with their picture and then picked out the paints and put it into one of those, you know, white, I'm going to use one of my words, one of these white doohickeys that hang, you have a little paint in different circles and it's just, you know, my wife and I are firm believers and have another interest in social media and electronic devices and playing games and being a gamer and all that kind of stuff.
So what do you feel is your role in your granddaughter's life, like what your responsibility maybe?
To help her understand there's more things in life than social media. She's not really into social media, but more than, you know, electronic devices.
Mm-hmm.
And to experience things that she's never experienced before.
Yes. And how are you different?
Keep it at her level.
How are you different as a grandpa than you were as a dad?
Very good question. I would say that I'm a more patient as a grandpa than when I was a dad.
Yeah. That's the beauty of it, isn't it? You have time to be more patient.
And just not trying to, just to be a better listener and hear what the little people have to say.
Absolutely.
You know, and I would say, I just mentioned to the gentleman that took the call that I went down to Ace Hardware and picked up one of those like airplanes you put together. It's
yes.
Like $4.99.
Oh yes.
And she didn't really know what I was doing. I says, well, showing how this goes together, and she's real good with, you know, a mechanical mind, and we put the plane together. And this one had a propeller and a rubber band, and we, you know, took it out to the park, and then, you know, she has a friend named Quinn, and they had a play date. We went out to the park, and I let her do it,
It's the simple pleasures, isn't it? It's the having the time that we didn't have the first go around, which is why that grandparenting role is so huge. So, Steve, thank you for being the grandpa that Sadie Mae needs, and hopefully you're inspiring other people to get out there, because my husband also is a big believer in going down to the hardware store and getting little crafts and projects and planes for grandson. So I love that suggestion. And please call in again when you're driving up the road.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. And I'm talking to the elders out there. What is it that we need to do? What is our responsibility in helping the next generation to have a better quality of life, to support our kids who are raising our grandchildren, to support our grandchildren? And if you don't have grandchildren or kids, how can you, just as an elder in the community, help make life a little bit better for everyone? 805-781-3875. And Gisela, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Well, I want to thank you for the enlightening shows that you provide, and
thank you.
I've learned so much from the conversations. I am a grandparent of six birth grandchildren and four children through marriages or relationships, and then I also was a CASA worker
Oh, wow.
with children too. So I have quite vast experience with grandchildren. I can say that it depends on the attitude of, we raised four children also, mm-hmm. and I think it also depends on the attitude of the adult parents mm-hmm. as to how we can influence our grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I have some children that really respect and enjoyed, you know, the experiences that we had out in nature and experiences going places, that trickled down. And then for others, it was just like, well, oh, you were great when when the grandchildren were little, but what happened? And then sometimes that's because the grandchildren pull away.
Yeah.
You know, so because they get into their social circles and then they don't return calls. But with the ones that do, we have incredible experiences, peak experiences, you know, from birth all the way through driving and, you know, and milestones. And I would say that a lot of the value that we could provide, you know, we could provide it even without having grandchildren. CASA mm-hmm. is always looking for volunteers, and they help children that are abused, neglected, abandoned. And then, you know, all you can do is just, you know, bake cookies for your kids and encourage them to go for hikes with us and that kind of thing. But it's a very enriching experience, and my husband and I have been very thankful for it.
And I would imagine that you've had so much experience in this. Mm-hmm. Do you find that you have the same level of compassion or patience that you did, you know, with the first grandchild as you do with the sixth? I'm just wondering, like, is it?
Yes. Yes. Just like our children, you know,
exactly.
The first child is the practice child, you know? And so, yes, as you go along, you know, you adjust to how different each personality is. And, you know, before it was adjusting to four children, and now it's adjusting to 10, you know,
yes.
grandchildren. So each is, I would say that you do become wiser and older, and that's why I think it is good for the younger ones to you know, really appreciate how much we can share. I have some grandchildren that just listen to our stories, you know, for years. They love listening to it. They learn from them. And then other ones just think we're just old fogies, you know?
Yes. So,
but I would say that you become much more softer, much, much more wise as you get older, and you try to apply what you can.
I agree. So, I have two little nuggety things I'll share while you're on the air. I want to see what your thoughts are. So
sure.
My mom's success as a grandma is she's mm-hmm. very good on her phone texting and sending pictures. So she texts with the grandkids where they wouldn't pick up the
yes.
phone or maybe come see her. So she has this,
yes.
I'm really proud of her for being adept with being able to connect with the kids, because
mm-hmm.
that's where they are. They're on their phone. So
mm-hmm.
she texts them
mm-hmm.
and sends pictures. And then the other piece, I haven't gotten my mom to try this yet, but to make mm-hmm. short videos of yourself with a family story, like maybe it's somebody's birthday, and here's something I remember about you when you were young, or it's your grandpa's birthday,
mm-hmm.
and here's something he did. Film these little
mm-hmm.
videos and send them to the kids, because, again, that's where they're getting their interactions.
Yeah.
And so instead of kind of bashing the phones, we can jump in and kind of get them where they are.
No, and you know what? I would say that exactly, that I've been able to have more communication with the ones that tend to be that way by doing that. And not family stories, but I will send them, you know, videos, old videos, and do little pretext to it. And oftentimes they will respond with a, you know, a heart or a thumbs up, or that's really cool. I agree. You know what? I think that we as elders also need to be pliable.
Yes.
And kind of exactly meet the young ones where society is now, and that includes phones and texting and that. So I agree with you. I think your mother's doing a great job. And happy birthday to Georgia.
Oh, thank you so much, Isabel. Thank you for calling in, and please call again.
Okay, my dear. Thank you. Bye.
Have a great day. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. So what do you think of that idea, Brad? I mean, and Giselle reminded me also, and I haven't done this yet, but we are going through our old family movies, and I was like taking screen videos of some of the old movies and sending it to my kids, just ha 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 when you were young. But I think I'm going to capture them more so I can share them with my grandchildren and to my nieces and nephews as well, because I have nieces and nephews that are a lot younger than my kids. And so that they're getting those family stories in a way of, you know, where they are on their phone, not saying you're going to come sit in front of the telly with us for hours.
Take a look at our slides that we've got
exactly.
in the carousel.
Let me remind you of our trip, yes.
Yes.
But I think, wouldn't that be a great, fun way to connect, is sending those little videos and their ha-has, and everyone can kind of, because like a lot of families, we have a giant, you know, family text chain with all 17 people, to throw those videos up there. And I need to get my parents to maybe tell some stories so the kids can watch it instead of sitting there, you know, with a grump face.
I think that's an awesome idea, because you're actually bringing it to them and into the conversation and providing some context. I mean, I don't know about you, but see, with both my parents and their parents gone, and my wife is in a similar situation. We've been going through my father-in-law's estate, and on both sides of my kids' families, there's pictures that we have no idea who any of these people are.
And it's really sad. I feel the same way.
And it would be so nice to have that context, to be able to build that in, so you would have that knowledge and context and stories around that, and it would spark further conversation.
Agreed. And I think it's a great place to kind of close things up today, is the importance of those stories. Because remember, I started off saying that what is the role of the elders in society? And that is being the custodians of the family history and the family story and the family values. And so our role is to pass that information on that may not be valued in the moment, but is valued down the road. And so we can't expect our grandkids to experience it or love it or be involved right away, but they will come back for that. And if we haven't made that connection, that history is absolutely lost. And so whether you get that, you know, moment of attention right then, you'll get it at some point. Someone will go back and look, and they'll be able to see what the picture is and who the person was and why they mattered in the family history. Because one of the greatest determination of mental wellness is feeling a part of something greater than ourselves. That when young people, adults, all humans feel like they're a part of something that matters, a story that's greater than themselves, they feel connected and whole, and it helps them feel less isolated, alienated. They're less apt to be a part of peer pressure or bullying. And so by sharing the family history, whether they acknowledge it or not, it's giving them a sense of a story that's large that they're a part of. So this has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Send me a message on Facebook or Instagram. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our show, however you get your podcasts. But as always, I thank you for tuning in and supporting this program and Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.